Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with the Tim May Show. And as you see there on the screen, my good buddy, cohort, Matt Wilhelm. We'll get to him in a second, but we'll get to him right now. What am I talking about? You always go to the linebacker when you got any questions. But Matt, it's big game week, man. Ohio State at Oregon, two unbeatens, number two in the country, at number three in the country. The excitement has been building for this really since February and March, but since everything filtered out in the transfer portal world, with both of these teams getting outstanding quarterbacks from the Big 12, you know, Dylan Gabriel at Oregon, formerly of Oklahoma, and of course Will Howard at Ohio State, formerly of Kansas State, and I think he's playing extremely well at the moment. And of course, now they've delivered an unbeaten versus an unbeaten. The excitement is quite high, correct?
It absolutely is. And I think, as you and I've talked about now for the last 5 weeks, the way in which the schedule set up for Ohio State, this like newly revamped Ohio State, it's allowed, you know, Coach Day and the staff to see a lot of players play a lot of football, you know, given the way that a lot of these games have gone down, to set the table for, you know, who are going to be those calls. I usually say like 11 to 14 starters on offense and defense as we're going to play different packages. You kind of know who's going to get the lion's share of those. And I think the guys that, you know, maybe are not ready to play this level of football, at least from a consistency standpoint, probably won't see a lot of those reps. And I'll be honest, Tim, like leading into this football game, it was, you know, it was Akron, Western Michigan, you know, Marshall, with, you know, some of the early momentum challenge, Michigan State, Iowa, like all these games, you know, ended up the way that we thought they would.
Yeah.
But they all in their own right kind of had like a little mini challenge that Ohio State, who's immensely talented with, you know, all the ramifications of, you know, kind of a national championship or bust, had to overcome, whether that's, you know, coaching, players, consistency, momentum, the defense at sometimes, the offense at other times. And I think Coach Day seemed extremely, you know, comfortable and confident going in halftime up 7-0 and then coming out and just mowing them down, you know, 28 to 6 or 28-7 in the second half against a very good Iowa team. But all these little unique football challenges that have popped up, I think bodes well for Ohio State as opposed to just flat out having no adversity up to this point and then now go on the road, which we have already, but go on the road with, again, a 2-3 matchup that everybody's really showcasing.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, man, you played the game at the highest level, including the Super Bowl. I mean, right on through. I mean, national championship and stuff. Y'all had some huge games. You had some huge games in your life, even in high school. But when you're on this kind of stage, you know, it's a national stage. So much is at stake. People around you have been looking forward to this forever. I'm talking about as a player. When the week of a game like this, when do you start to merge like your emotions, which you've got to have in check, and your focus? If you know what I'm saying, because you've got to be so focused on the fine details, because that's usually what wins and loses these kind of matchups and stuff. But because you can't be that way 7 straight days, you know, leading into a game. So when is it important for Ohio State? I mean, you know, this or my show here comes out on Wednesdays and stuff. To me, that would seem like the day when really you're trying to unclutter your mind from anything else. But go ahead.
No, you hit it right on the head. I think, you know, following Iowa, walking away 5-0, you know, being, you know, entering into this opportunity against a 2-3 matchup of both against two, you know, undefeated football teams, your emotions kind of spike because everybody immediately wants to talk about Oregon and talk about the challenge that they are and talk about what a big game this is. So that's, to your point, that's the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday is a little bit of like, you know, up emotional. But then once you get into that facility and you start digging into the film, you start spending the hours that you spend with the coaches, you're spending the hours you spend on the practice field, it comes down because it's just work. Like it's content. You know, yes, you're still a student. We have to talk about school. But it's the work aspect applied towards this game against Oregon. And so Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are really like head down, grind them out, learn who they are, learn how we're going to attack them, learn how we're going to limit or stop them, you know, and what they do, you know, special teams and so on. And then probably it actually might tip back up because there's, media availability. I know most days, but usually as you get closer, like what is it, Thursday, you guys are in there.
No, we our last availability, except for maybe getting to talk to Ryan Saturday, Friday when they get off the bus out there, is pretty much done by the end of the day on Wednesday. You know what I mean?
Okay, so
But
end of
just,
the day, end of the
yeah.
day, Wednesday,
Three
and then
practices are in the books, you know?
exactly three big work days are in the books, and again, you guys accentuate, this matchup, accentuate, and you guys, and from a media standpoint, you're learning more. You're going to be learning more about Oregon and their threats and what they do well offensively and defensively, and you're going to ask those pointed questions to our players and kind of gauge where they're at. Within our game plan of like, hey, we're still Ohio State, but this is a very good football team. We have to like stop, limit what they do. So, but then it does crank back up because you start probably your exposure to the hype, the travel, your exposure to maybe your parents, your relatives, your friends talking about this football game now that the work is kind of done. Work week is like it does crank back up. And so that's where I would also say the veteran-laden team that we have, and this like this perfect blend of play. Chase McLaughlin's played in a bunch of big football games at Bama. Jack Sawyer, all the Abuka, all the guys that have come back. Will Howard, this is probably going to be the biggest game Will Howard will ever have played in his entire collegiate career. If I mean, to not to take anything away from him at Kansas State, but it's not the Big 12. This is the Big 10, newly revamped Big 10. So, the hype kind of goes back up, but then this is where, as a player, both professionally and collegiately, when you were the prime time football game with a lot on the line, the gamers, the competitors, which this locker room is full of them on both sides, you thrived and flourished knowing that the entire country or the entire kind of like world, for those folks that want to stream this, globally and watch, the world famous Ohio State Buckeyes, to coin that phrase,
Well,
in this match.
Buckeye Nation goes around the world, so it's,
Oh, you're absolutely
yeah.
right. And so, like, to know that you're like the thing to watch is what I used to love. What
Yeah.
the like the players, like the great players that I played with, used to love and thrive in that opportunity to make those plays on the biggest stage.
Sweet. Yeah, by the way, I've got to intro or promote the fact that I've got Paul Feinbaum coming on here in a few minutes. Recorded a session with him this week, and also the great Bill Bender of the Sporting News is coming on giving his views. I mean, he's a guy who lives in the Columbus area, basically Pickerington, but he covers the nation, and he's one of my good friends also, and he has great insight into what's going on nationally and putting this game in perspective, like you're talking about nationally. But before I get to the little session with Paul Feinbaum, I wanted to ask you this. In my opinion, Saturday, one of the things that really shone was I thought the Ohio State linebackers, which is your bailiwick,
Yeah.
kind of stole the show at moments. They're going against this vaunted or being compared to this vaunted Iowa defense with its really good linebackers. That Higgins
Yeah.
kid is no joke, man. But neither was Cody Simon, neither was Sonny Styles. I
Sonny
thought
Styles,
Sonny
yeah.
Styles had his best game yet as a linebacker. And yeah, I just wanted to get your take. I mean, what, you being a purveyor of linebackers and a
Sure.
connoisseur, really, what's your
Yeah.
take on that?
So I think first and foremost, anytime any linebacker has a great game or is showcased making a lot of plays, you have to give almost like what a running back does to the offensive line, the defensive line. The defensive line did a great job, occupying and playing very well up front, which allows, Cody Simon and Sonny Styles to run around and make plays. But I think it's also a very good sign, for Simon, who missed, a game early in the year and is, of course, wearing, the block O as the leader of that defense. And Sonny Styles transitioning from more of a, playing low to high to being right there in the middle where, that linebacker level. Eventually, for all players, everything just kind of cl it clicks. The scheme clicks, your vision, your pre-snap reads, your post-snap reads, it all kind of clicks and your body starts to fall into the positions that they're supposed to be able to make plays. And then you add the fact that they're these elite athletes doing it. They can run, they can hit, they can tackle. So, it's And in some cases, like you would hope offseason or training camp prepares you to go do that very early, but your film's never perfect. And you're always chasing perfection. You're always chasing a cleaner game. You're always chasing to, again, tune in your eye discipline to be looking at the right things, which then leads your body to the right place to be able to make plays, like I said earlier. And I think this Iowa football game, which was kind of like a, it was a revamped offense. It was better than, you know, most Iowa offenses we've seen in the last, you know, 3, 4 years. A little attempting to be a little bit more explosive, attempting to be a little bit more evasive, you know, and kind of keep us guessing. And I think it was just our defensive line overwhelmed their offensive line and played very well, which then allowed Simon and Styles to just fit appropriately and make plays.
I was going to ask you. I mean, I thought the defensive line played extremely well across the board. The regular, as the old saying goes, the usual suspects. But you could tell Tyleik Williams was back in the game, right? I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
the disruption he brings from his spot is obvious to anybody. Compare last week with the previous two games when he didn't play, it's pretty obvious, right?
It absolutely was. He's a game changer on first and second down, you know, and when teams attempt to run the football. And I think that this, again, I'm not trying to be super like hyper positive, but like this Iowa football team and its challenges, I thought what they did great from being at the game and watching was handling the run game and limiting the run game on first and second down, which put Iowa in 3rd and 7 plus or 3rd and 6 plus, which then Tyleik then runs off the field. We run down, we, you know, we run in our skill, our pass rushers in a specific package. And I think it accentuates, you know, it allows Sonny Styles and Cody Simon to play, you know, play pass and not have to, you know, fit the run. And then you get our hyper talented defensive backfield, you know, running around, covering guys, you know, playing man. We can blitz guys. We can, you know, we can show coverages and roll to something else. And I think it's the perfect stepping stone to a game flow that we're going to have. And it's a completely different challenge with the type of talent that Oregon will have, but the same recipe of limiting them on first and second down, getting them in the third, you know, 3rd and 6 plus situations, and then allow our defense with, you know, with Sawyer on the edge and JTT on the other edge to kind of cook. And we have the talent to cover their talent at wide receiver on the edges and outside.
Tell you what, keep that thought in mind because I'm going to go to my little conversation with Paul Feinbaum right here right now because I want to come back and talk to you about, clearly Oregon has a talented quarterback in Dillon Gabriel. He was really good last year at Oklahoma and is kind of like grown into his quacker shoes with Oregon. I mean, it took a little while for I think for him to really meld with this offense as the season went on, but he's playmaking now and stuff, but I wanted to get your take on him. But for just a moment here, let's get to my conversation with Paul Feinbaum. Oh my goodness, I'm always excited to have this next young man on. He's a young man compared to me. I'm 70. Paul Feinbaum. What are you, Paul Feinbaum? Going on 28? What?
I mean, I just turned 35, just in time to see Ryan Day choke another big game.
There you go. Well, we'll see if that happens. I knew you were going to get your shots in early and often, but it is the biggest game of the year so far, at least for Ohio State, at least in the Big Ten. Maybe, I thought Georgia Alabama was, but boy, with both of those guys, teams sitting with two losses, with a loss each now, the focus turns to Ohio State, Oregon, great showdown game. Just what's your early take on that, Paul?
Yeah, I can't wait. And by the way, I realize Ohio State is royalty, but where does it say Ohio State gets to begin the season in the second week in October? Because I can't find I haven't been able to find one of their games until now because I don't have the CNW and all these other off-brand channels. But anyway, it is great to see Ohio State on a big stage, and yes, it is the biggest game in the country. And I'm going to end the suspense. I like the Buckeyes. I think they are secretly a great team, and they've had 6 weeks to prepare for this one game. So why wouldn't they be ready?
What a stepping stone schedule. But it reminds me of Michigan last year. They had a really easy schedule and parlayed that into a great quote team, right? As it rolled into when the games really counted. What just real quick, what are you most curious about in this game? Is it Will Howard and Dillon Gabriel just a year away from being Big 12 quarterbacks? Being able to seize the moment. I mean, is it about these two defenses? What just grabs your curiosity most, I guess?
I mean, I'm fascinated by all the talent on Ohio State's football team. And I want to see it in a really impressive live setting, which that is, against what I think is a good team. Oregon has been hard to figure out, but that's what this game is about. And listen, everybody's obsessed over Alabama and Texas and Georgia. And in the back of my mind, I remember telling you back in January, February, I thought Ohio State might be the best team. And we're going to finally get a chance to figure that out.
Yeah. Then you took me to the woodshed in July, you know, and whatever, which I don't know. I can understand the questions based on recent history about Ohio State, Ryan Day, et cetera. But is Chip Kelly, is that the most impressive hire going into this college football season that any team made, in your opinion? Well, that's my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, it is because listen. I mean, I've been around long enough to remember when Chip Kelly was an elite football coach at the Power Four level or whatever you call it nowadays. And he he's in a world of his own over there. And I think that's really that's what I want to see as well. And listen, I've taken my shots at Ryan Day. I respect Ryan Day. He's like everybody's favorite. Oldest brother, that inherits the fortune. I mean, who wouldn't want to walk into that gold mine? I can't mean Kay when the board did the same thing.
Yeah,
but
cave
not
in.
As an assistant.
Excuse me.
So I mean, good for Ryan. I think this is the year that he finally sheds those demons. And you know, I still have Buckeye fans like you who are trying to tell me that they beat Georgia a couple of years ago and it hadn't been for this. And I mean, I'm over that. It's gone. But I want to see what Ryan Day and Chip Kelly are all about. I think Chip Kelly was a smart move. As far as Will Howard, I think he's pretty good. Not convinced of it, but I think.
Yeah. By the way, I was listening to your show the other day, and you had the guy on reporter on from Georgia. Like, you know, we're defending, but you do put us in a defensive mode, you know, to come right to the heart of it, you know. And yeah, I mean, the three losses to Michigan. I mean, anybody can look them up. Been indelible and on Ohio State's record. But yeah, Ryan Day has stepped up and become a true head coach now, meaning he doesn't coordinate the offense. He doesn't play call and stuff. And I really think it's reflected in how this team is playing from the standpoint of, you know what I mean? I think the offense has a plan. Not they didn't have a plan under him. Do not get me wrong. But with Kelly, it's just sort of a different look, right?
Oh, listen. I think head coaches ought to be head coaches, and anyone who thinks you can call plays and be the head coach is crazy. I mean, those days are over. It's too complicated nowadays.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, I see you took down behind you. You've got a screen behind you. I think you had that mushroom cloud that was hanging over Tuscaloosa on there when we first got together here this morning.
Yeah, the studio is not lit because the power. We had a nuclear explosion here Saturday in Tuscaloosa. I mean, I've never seen anything quite like it. I mean, a week ago they're on top of the world. They beat Georgia. Now they lose to a team that lost to Georgia State.
Yeah.
I mean, Sunday morning I wasn't sure how bad it was, but now I'm convinced it was the worst loss in Alabama history. And I say that because they're number one. This isn't some bad Alabama team losing to Louisiana Tech or Monroe. I mean, this is a team that just put on one of the most dazzling displays I've ever seen.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, stem to stern, they won that ball. Even my baby brother, biggest Alabama fan you're going to admit, said they basically got outplayed, outcoached, everything, every out thing you can think of, right?
How do you get outcoached by Vanderbilt?
I don't know, but it happened. It happened, baby. And they got out quarterback played by Vanderbilt. I mean, Jalen Milroe, the Heisman Trophy leader, favorite going into the week. Now is it this Pavia guy? I mean, who are we voting for now, Paul?
We're voting for Javier. Anyway, right now, I think it's. By the way, you and I have done this a long time. I get so fatigued by this. You know, Stephen A. Smith told me today, hey, Jalen Milroe, he might be out of the Heisman race. Well, who's in the Heisman race on the first week in October?
Yes, exactly. Everybody is. It looks like, or nobody. Hey. Last thing though, it was a tough weekend for the SEC. I'm not trying to rub it in, but it was, the out card for everybody now is this 12 team playoff, right? I mean, it's like, you don't even have to make your conference championship game and be in the 12 team playoff. But Man, these are blisters. I mean, Tennessee going to Arkansas and getting beat by the Pit Boss, Sam Pittman and company. I mean, those don't go away easily with the fan base, do they?
No, they don't. And it's a game of numbers. And like Alabama, people say, well, it's only one loss. Yeah, but they had four SEC road games. It was and Georgia. It was the easiest road game they had. They still play at Tennessee, LSU, and Oklahoma. And yeah, you can get away with two losses. You can't get away with three at Vanderbilt on your resume.
No.
And yeah, it was frankly, if I can say this quietly, a great weekend for the Big Ten. Because the door may have opened for another berth.
Yeah, it was a great. The Big Ten could have taken a weekend off, and it would have been a great weekend for the Big Ten. Hey, last question for you. How much import should we put on these midseason great games or great matchups and stuff? And that's kind of a obtuse kind of question, but I'm just going. We've been pointing at Oregon and Ohio State as being the matchup of the midseason in the Big Ten for like 9 months now. You know what I mean? Ever since the new year turned and stuff. And yet, like you said, it's not going to have the impact one way or the other that that would have had a year ago, right? I mean, it's kind of an interesting way to look at college football anymore.
I mean, I've covered a few game of the centuries,
Yes.
and they do matter, but we're into week to week now. I mean, it's all about entertainment. And this is this week's massive showdown, like 2 weeks ago. And last week I was out in College Station last week for Missouri, and I was being told this is the best game of the day. And I'm like going, Missouri at Texas A&M is the
Yeah.
best game of the day. And it turned out to be the worst game of the day on the craziest weekend we've ever seen. So
Yes.
sometimes these big weekends don't live up, but it's still worth. To me, this is just simply about the two schools. Oregon, I thought going in was the third pick to win the national championship. They look bad early on, and the Buckeyes were 1A and 1B with Georgia. So I mean, I think with a big win here, we may see Ohio State vault to number one. I mean, why not? I mean, then next week you got Texas and Georgia.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the thing is, the great thing you can say about these exploding conferences is we get some damn good games right now. I mean, they're scheduled. You got to play a conference game. You got to play Texas, Georgia at Texas. It's going to be huge. And it's like 1 week after the other, something big. Ohio State's sitting there first weekend of November, they play at Penn State. You can't dodge each other and things like that. Hey, last big question for you, though. This is a little prediction thing because we did it earlier in the year and stuff back in July. But who comes out of the Big Ten in your mind right now as you just sit here, the little bit of evidence you got in front of you, is it going to be a Oregon Ohio State rematch in the championship game, do you feel?
I do. To me, and it's just, I'm not about to go broke picking Penn State to play for the Big Ten championship. I just
Yeah.
think, they're too predictably bad sometimes when it comes to the big game. So I think this is a preview. Doesn't matter as much as it would in the past, but I think, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Dan Lanning. I think he's one of the bright coaches in the country. He's part of the Saban tree, the Kirby Smart tree. And this to me is and by the way, he has not fared that well in big games.
Right.
KU and the board beat him a bunch of times they beat him twice last year in the
Right.
Pac-12. And so, I mean, I think more than anything, this is really just an introduction to Ohio State because I travel in these conversations on the big shows, Tim, as you know.
Yeah.
I don't think Ohio State has come up one time this year on any of those treetop conversations.
Yeah, that's a little bit odd though, isn't it? Because no matter what, no matter what, Ohio State is a very talented football team with everybody back. I mean, you don't get that anymore, right?
By the way, you put Caleb Downs on Alabama's team last Saturday, and they wouldn't have lost.
Seth McLaughlin on Alabama's team last week,
Exactly.
they probably don't lose. I mean, that's a good point.
Everybody in Alabama was ready to get rid of McLaughlin. I thought Caleb Downs was one of the most significant defections I've seen, and that Alabama defense is just outright embarrassing right now. And he may have known that, by the way.
Yeah. By the way, did Malachi Moore ever come off the field? I'm not sure.
He issued an apology for his Bush League behavior. By the way, it wasn't Malachi Moore that bothered me so much. It was his coach essentially not saying anything about it. I mean, that can you imagine? Saban would have destroyed this guy. Can you? I mean, any big time coach, you have to act like, and the board just looked like a deer in the headlights.
Yeah. No matter what his NIL deal is, you're still the head coach. This guy embarrassed you and your program on, I don't think that was national television, but it sure was national ramifications. Yeah,
Well, it was on the SEC network, whatever that
there
means.
you go. That's big. I know that's big in your territory. All
Well,
right.
it is. A lot
Hey.
of bars were going, where do you find this SEC network?
Yeah, I know. It was like Peacock for Ohio State fans 2 weeks ago when they played at Michigan State. There was so much griping. And then, of course, half the people, the downloads weren't working right. You know, it was you thought it was going to be bad, and then it was, you know. It's like one of those kind of things. Well,
Well,
Paul,
Jim, I
man, I
want to say
appreciate you
before we
joining me again.
go, we are friends. Everybody thinks we hate each other.
I know.
But I mean, you've been one of my longest running friends in the business. So, and now, with Sankey and Patini, I mean, we're practically related, aren't
Hey, I want to ask you one quickie before we go. Do you, because Sankey basically indicates he's not really for that mega super
we? No,
league.
no. He,
And I don't think Petitti would be either. So I don't think we're
it,
headed there that way as much as people think we are, right?
no chance. No chance.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, there's a better chance of the Big Ten and the SEC leaving the rest of everyone else behind than we are of having that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Paul Feinbaum, thank you once again for joining the Tim May Show, my man. We'll see you later down the road.
Tim, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thing you got to say about Paul Feinbaum, no matter what, he stands by his opinions, and he states them sometimes vociferously. But love having Paul Feinbaum. He and I've been friends for a while now, and you know, we had a little tete-a-tete earlier in the summer. It was pretty funny. I'll never get even with him on that, but appreciate Paul Feinbaum coming on this hectic week. And of course, he had to come on despite all the fallout and the smoke and the fire going on in the Southeastern Conference after last weekend's disaster. Three top 10 teams all getting beat by lesser thans. That's
Yes.
pretty tough, isn't it? When you think about it, isn't it, Matt?
It is. And I think it's again, I can't, I was going to attempt to try to how does that affect Ohio State, but if Ohio State just keeps taking care of their business, it's kind of irrelevant. And because it's a 12 team playoff, it's a new mindset of dropping a game. So it's it was cool to see. I thought it was a great football weekend, a great college, Saturday lineup with some great matchups, even watching, Baylor and Iowa State. It was just a great football. And again, the Arkansas Tennessee game and the way that it finished up was crazy as well.
And of the top 10 teams that played over the last weekend, I thought Texas, of course, was off there playing Oklahoma, one of the great
Yeah, Red River
games.
rivalry, yeah.
But one of the great games in of the day also, this showdown Saturday we're coming up to. But Ohio State had by far the most impressive win of any top 10 team, in my opinion, that played. And it just shows you this team is really coming into its own. But I wanted to ask you this before we get to that.
Sure.
Dylan Gabriel, when you got a guy that can throw really well, he's really good on those intermediate and short stuff. He can get out on the run, the edge, and do some things. But then also, he's got the ability to run the ball, and he's kind of exploited that a little bit the last couple of games. But just what's your take on him? But number two, what's on, like, for example, we were talking about the linebackers a while ago. This is, even though is what is as loaded as these teams are in the across the board in terms of weapons and how on game your secondaries must be in a game like this. This is still a linebacker intensive game the way I look at it, based on everything that the both quarterbacks can do to you.
Absolutely. And I think I mean, for the one thing that pops into my head with a quarterback like him is as it pertains to linebackers is again, your fits, your run fits, your run responsibilities, because what you're going to see out of Dylan Gabriel is not necessarily going to be, like JT Barrett quarterback power. It's going to be zone read, power read, where he's reading the end man on the line, and you have to fit it appropriately, where you can't just crash or chase He's going to make very good decisions, like JT Barrett actually did in this that zone read, power read scheme with Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
So that threat by itself, and as a defensive player, it's extremely defeating when you can fit something up appropriately, or you can, the pass rush almost delivers, but he sneaks out as a great athlete, keeps his plays alive, and either beats you with his arm or takes off and runs, on those third down situations. So it's definitely a threat. The one thing that I'm going to be continue to watch and probably be listening from our players as the week goes on is as they study Oregon is team speed. I think that's going to be the biggest factor compared to Akron, Western Michigan, Marshall, Michigan State, and Iowa is the team speed that Oregon will bring along with a player like Dylan Gabriel, who's,
Yeah.
got 3, 4 years of starting experience. And then I think, as you said, the intermediate, it's gosh, it feels like every Oklahoma quarterback at one point, like Baker, was that guy
Yeah.
intermediate beating you up, and then he takes some shots.
Yeah.
Kyler Murray was that guy that works the intermediate, takes some shots, and of course can take off and win with his legs as well. And then Dylan Gabriel, at Oklahoma, did very much, and they're all about the same size. They're
Yeah.
around 6 foot, 210 pounds. So it's very much a system thing. And I think that's also what I think Ohio State has to buckle down is like, what do these guys do very well? How do we limit that and force them to get a little uncomfortable? And as I said, and kind of talking about what we did against Iowa is getting them into those third and six plus situations where they're a little bit more predictable, where our matchup with our defensive backs on their very skilled, talented wide receivers is probably the needle probably tips our way as an advantage. And it allows, as you said, the linebackers, Cody Simon and Sonny Styles, as well as our front, to kind of cook and put pressure on Dylan Gabriel and force him to get uncomfortable in the pocket.
Yeah. It's just, man, just what was there ever a game where you on Friday morning or Friday or midday Friday or maybe late Thursday, where you just kind of, I'm using this as a euphemism, shut the book. All right, I know everything I need to know about these guys. Was there,
Well, there's
you understand what I'm
absolutely,
saying?
yes, and even still, as I'm helping my son and St. Ed's,
Yeah, I
it's
know.
like there's a point where you've watched enough film where like you're like, I know them, I know who that. There's nothing any more another hour of film is going to tell me or show me or that I have to go find that I don't know already after, as I said, that week's worth of work. And that's what I think, like I said, to be, to privy to some of the coaches' conversations through the week, to some of the players, for them talking about themselves. But it's like, for me, it's like sometimes I want to know that they know Oregon, that
Yeah.
the threats and the personnel and the game flow of how Oregon wins football games, the tempo with which they play, which I think is, something that Oregon has always done since Chip Kelly was there. It's tempo, it's speed. It's that, it's kind of what we now have at Ohio State, that little like muddle huddle with signals and they go fast, which also stresses the defense. Matching personnel groupings, which is something that I'm sure they're probably going to do. But I do think, knowing what I know of Dan Lanning, and attempting to want to play great defense, and I think the Oregon mindset, connecting with some folks that I kind of have or familiarity with in the Pacific Northwest, is Oregon also understands the conference that they're now playing in, like of having to play good defense, maybe not Pac-12, that's like, shit through a tin horn type of defense,
Yeah,
right? They've
yeah.
got to play good defense and they've got to run the football and
Yeah.
control the clock. It can't just be a track meet winning 50-48, right? Because that's just not a winning template for Big Ten football. So I think Dan Lanning, his staff, and kind of bleeding that into the players through the offseason about toughness, playing great defense, running the football, and then accentuating the playmakers, and it's a gift to have a guy like Dylan Gabriel be the leader with the football.
Absolutely. When you got a playmaker, a quarterback, you can go a lot of places no matter what you're running. But yeah, that's the thing. Well, hey, let's get real quick to my conversation with Bill Bender of the Sporting News, because we touch on that. I mean, I bring up to him the fact that, the thing that people, I think are understanding is Dan Lanning and before him, Mario Cristobal, they have been building their program into a what I call the elite of the nation model, not the best of the Pac-12 model, or the even the best of the, well, if you say best of the Big Ten, you're talking about Ohio State and a couple other teams, but meaning they've been trying to build a roster that fits that, not just winning the Pac-12, which doesn't exist in his former form anyway. And I think that's what they're a much bigger team across the board, especially on offensive and defensive lines than they were back in 2009 when Ohio State that season when Ohio State played them in the with Chip Kelly in the Rose Bowl way back then. But it's really interesting the way they've transformed that roster. But without any further ado, let's get to my conversation with Bill Bender, because we talk about a lot of things, both on the national scale and Ohio State at Oregon scale. Oh my goodness, oh my goodness. I always enjoy it when my good friend, we are good friends, aren't we, Bill Bender?
I would say yes, absolutely.
Yeah. When my good friend Bill Bender of the Sporting News jumps on, he's a national football guru, and no bigger game in the nation this week, as it turns out, based on what happened last week. It is no game is bigger than Ohio State at Oregon. Ohio State playing at Oregon for the first time since 1967, which I believe was the first year was the christening year for Autzen Stadium, which is now, was late coming, basically in football blue blood terms, late coming, but is now one of the palaces, or whatever you want to call it, castles of major college football. But Bill, unbeaten Ohio State versus number two ranked, unbeaten Ohio State versus number three ranked, and unbeaten Oregon at Oregon. So much is on the line, but it's the middle of the season. Just what's your take on this game from the jump?
Well, the Big Ten needs this game. I mean,
Oh,
it's
wait a
a
minute. I forgot to say that. This is a Big Ten game. Go ahead.
yeah, it's the Big Ten, the cross country, as Ryan Day put it in his press conference after the Iowa game, that it was good to face a little adversity against Iowa before this game. And everybody knows. I mean, we've had this, you and I, when we talked at Big Ten Media Day and at Holiday Inn Express about the Big Ten season, we were circling this day. And
Yes.
I think, Oregon, I don't know who the there's probably more pressure on Ohio State to go out there, but in a way there's pressure on Oregon because it's in their house. This is one of
Yes.
those respect games. Can you beat Ohio State in your house? I watched them cover to cover last week against Michigan State. I'm really intrigued, Tim. What I can't figure out, maybe you can help me with, and based on what you've seen with Ohio State all season, is what's it look like up front on both sides?
Yeah.
As Ryan Day was saying after Iowa, that the offensive line got it going in the second half against a physical Iowa defense. Can they do that against an Oregon front seven that looked pretty good against Michigan State on Saturday night or
Yeah.
last Friday?
Well, here's the way I put it. Well, it started with Mario Cristobal, but then when Dan Lanning took over, there has been a concerted effort by Oregon, but even back starting back then, to build a roster that reflects more Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, meaning not a roster that could win, could dominate the Pac-12, but could be considered among the elite in that realm of competition, because that's what everybody's now pointing toward, right? I mean, with the expanded playoff and the expanded Big Ten, the Big Ten's almost Big Ten times two minus two. I like the way I just said that. But winning the Big Ten is a big deal, right? But that's not what everybody's after anymore, man. I mean, you can get into the college football playoff without even playing in the Big Ten championship game, is what we're talking about. But you've got to have the Jimmies and the Joes to now go shoulder to shoulder, face mask to face mask with the blue bloods of the sport. And we all know what happened this past weekend, Alabama falling at Vanderbilt. And Alabama was dominated in that game. That was no fluke. We saw Tennessee get beat by Arkansas. So is Tennessee really as good as we thought? But my point is, everybody's trying to build that Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State type of roster that has depth, but also has size on the both sides of the lines. And I think Oregon has done a really good job over the last 8 years, 10 years of doing that. I think if you look at their roster, you agree, don't you?
Yeah, and it's a process, and Dan Lanning hasn't been there long, and they are fast. They are not the old Chip Kelly Oregon, which is somewhat ironic because Chip has built this offense at Ohio State around the running game and the quarterback precision and distribute. You know, I think Will Howard's done a good job of being a conductor of that offense.
Yes.
Dylan Gabriel hasn't been at Oregon quite as long. So they do have guys and they've done it through the portal a little bit. Evan Stewart was a portal guy. They got Pez Johnson. They're trying to get him on track. He has 43 catches this season. And then I was very impressed against the Spartans with Jordan James. He is a power running back. So they are trying to get to that point.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have the 4- and 5-star talent that the Ohio States and Georgias and Alabamas have, but that doesn't mean this team isn't capable of beating. They are the first team Ohio State's played that is capable of actually beating them.
Yeah. But here's the thing, getting back to, before we talk about that specifically, getting back to Oregon, what they've done is they have embraced the NIL culture. You know what I mean? And having Phil Knight as one of your benefactors is so huge. Phil Knight of Nike fame. And, so my point is, not just are they getting players, but one of the reasons they're getting players is, like Ohio State and the other big powers, they've embraced part of the attraction, which is what can you give me in the NIL realm, you know, whether it be a transfer portal person or whether it be somebody in the recruiting realm, because they're highly rated. Their recruiting class is highly rated going into 2025. And so they've gotten that part of their program right, if you follow my drift. Because, you know, Bill, we're in a totally different era now compared to 4 years ago, and you've got to be in there punching financially as well as you are, you know, physically on the football field. And that's where Oregon really took the step it needed to take. And other teams are now, programs are playing catch up, and we'll see where this goes. But then past that, I mean, getting Dylan Gabriel away from Oklahoma, Dylan Gabriel opted at the end of the season last year to move on. You know, he started his sojourn at UCF and then moved on to Oklahoma, was one of the great quarterbacks in the country last year, in my opinion. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's at Oregon, and Oregon, which lost Bo Nix to the National Football League draft. And they got Dante Moore from UCLA, who was a highly considered recruit a couple of years ago. He's in the wings right now. But the bottom line is they reached out and got one of the nation's really good quarterbacks. And just like Ohio State did with Will Howard fit exactly what Ryan Day was looking for his football team, even before he had to go out and get Chip Kelly as his offensive coordinator. And Chip Kelly has embraced Will Howard because, I mean, you know, as you watched from the press box last Saturday, Will Howard can and will run the ball. That's what they were missing the last 3 years with C.J. Stroud and then Kyle McCord. And that just adds so much to this Ohio State offense. And that's what I wanted to get to. You watching Ohio State for the first time live this past weekend, just what's your take on this Ohio State team? I mean, dude, the line on that game dropped from like 20, 21 points down to, 16 or 17 by a kickoff. And Ohio State handled Iowa handily. Yeah, it took a half to really get their feet under them and get rid of the turnover-itis. But after that, they dominated the third quarter as well as they've dominated anybody in the last many years.
Well, Iowa, as you have to understand, and you understand this, I don't know if the average, you know, everybody across the country that watches college football does. Iowa keeps everything in front, better than any defense in the country on a year-to-year basis. They don't. That's why that big play to Jeremiah Smith, the 53-yard pass, was so huge, because it opened up everything else. Then he makes the one-handed catch from there. I would say what's different from Ohio State from last year to this year to me is when they need a play, they can go more than one place.
Yep.
When they needed a play last year, the ball was going to Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yep.
It doesn't have to go to him. It can go to Emeka, who had 3 touchdowns. It can go to either running back who combined 8 yards per carry. And what, like you just said, Tim, Will Howard can just tuck and run it.
Yeah.
So
and I think, you know, that Jeremiah Smith there. So Yeah, you had already talked about him, so that's
Well, yeah,
five.
it could go to him, of
Yeah.
course, and I thought that was implicit at this point.
Yeah,
But
it was. But some people don't listen
yeah.
like
So,
me.
I mean, just Chip Kelly's ability to spread it out, and one of the things I did know about him before he came to Ohio State was from watching UCLA the last few years is there's this misconception that he's just spread it out and throw four vertical shots every. No, he relies on the running game,
Oh, yeah.
and when he has got two of them, which he had at UCLA a few times, with a quarterback that can run, they're hard to stop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, and then I think the defense, I don't want to say we don't talk about them enough. We know the defense is good, but once they got that 2-score lead, I may have said it, you may have heard me. I said that's ball game because you knew the turnovers were coming next. I think that veteran defense is playing very aggressive. They stop the run. Run the ball, stop the run, good things happen. And I wrote after the game, I think they're the most. I understand why they're not number one. I don't get too bent out of shape about that because the reason they're not number one is they're not in the SEC and they don't have the benefit of all these top five SEC games every week. That's why this Oregon game's so important. This
Yeah.
is their biggest,
Oh, yeah.
as big as the Michigan game will be and the Penn State game will be, and potentially Indiana.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Nebraska.
Nebraska. Yeah, there's another team with one loss or less in the Big Ten. This is the one. This is the one the most people outside of the Michigan game, of course, this is the one everybody's going to be watching.
Yeah. And you know what? I think Ryan Day would agree with anybody who says this. This is the true barometer of whether they are that team. Because as you heard him answer my question on Saturday night after the game, this has been, and he was saying this at the beginning of the year, this has been a true stepping stone season so far. Now all of a sudden, here's that big step up, maybe step up to the landing, you know what I mean? On a stair step. I asked him over at Indianapolis before back in July when you and I were over there, and I said, when you looked out at this season, do you see a big mountain sitting there, which is the college football playoff, or what do you see? And he said, then it's you can't be looking at the mountain. You've got to be looking at these steps in front of you because if you slip on these steps, you may not even get a chance to climb the mountain. So he's sticking with that analogy, which is pretty cool. But then past that, he's exactly right. But this has been, I know you've been, even though you haven't been to a game until this past Saturday. I know you've been paying attention to Ohio State because you're that kind of guy, and in your job description. But it has been a nice little stairway or step ups, to this game. And but now, like you just said, put up or shut up time, right?
Well, yeah, and
But you
but
might have another chance in December to put up
well,
or
I
shut
would
up.
say put up or shut up, but look at the SEC over the weekend. Like, I guess. I mean, if they
Yeah.
lose, it's not like they couldn't just win the rest of them. But I think from the perception standpoint, yes, right now to this point, when I say complete, all those things I mentioned on offense, defense, the two most complete teams, and they're taking care of business on the field. You can
Yeah.
have all those things and be complete and have some screw around games. Texas is the other one that's done that.
Yes.
I was up at Michigan after in week two when they played Texas, and I've watched Ohio State dismantle Texas or Michigan up there with some of those Urban Meyer teams, and I've seen some other blowouts up there over the years. Texas did that. They were impressive doing it. And you kind of just in your brain a little bit, those two have the best combination. They're both averaging around 45, 46 points per game and giving up, I think Ohio State's a shade lower, around like 6.8, under Texas at 7. So they're taking care of their business as well. And you kind of, if you were saying today, and things change, they evolve, that would probably be my pick for the national championship game because they've been the two most complete teams. But
Yeah.
that could change, of course, when Georgia and Texas and all these. That's why I was saying, Tim, the SEC has all these showdown games. This is the biggest one for Ohio State. This is the one that's going to have the most lights on it because I think Michigan, by the time we get to that game, they may have three or four losses.
But Penn State's going to be a pretty decent game. I mean,
Yes.
if Penn State keeps winning, and it looks like they probably will, although they haven't been, in my opinion, as impressive on offense as I expected them to be. With Drew Aller back and a new offensive coordinator and run them down the line. But that's I think this Ohio State team has done a really good job. I even wrote about it with Emeka Egbuka talking about it of keeping its eye on what's in front of them, not what's down the road. And I thought that was quite exemplified by the way they progressively dominated Iowa, clearly the best team they've played so far. I mean, Iowa doesn't score until the backups on Ohio State's defense are in the game, and Caleb Johnson finally breaks off a big run to the end zone. But, you know, it's like you just said, it's been quite impressive the way Ohio State's gone about its business. It's been overwhelming favorites every week and then taking care of that for the most part. I wanted to ask you this. This is a big showdown weekend. Texas, Oklahoma, for example. Are you just going to sit back with your five televisions at your palatial home and just take it all in? Because you have to be an expert on every game, not just Ohio State, Oregon, right?
Yeah, I wish I was making the trip out to Autzen with the Buckeye beat there and all of my – that was a good part of the Iowa game. I got to see a lot of the people I like to hang around with. And, yeah. Because I'm running around so much. But, no, it'll be good because it's not just that game. There's Texas, Oklahoma at 3:30. That's going to look a little weird going a little later in the day. Quinn Ewers – will Arch Manning play? Quinn Ewers will probably start. He's been able to rehab. We've got – USC losing to Minnesota, but they still play Penn State.
Yes.
In the Coliseum.
Yes.
That's a great uniform game. That'll be fun. You have LSU and Ole Miss, one-loss SEC teams. And then at late night, you're going to get K-State, Colorado. And all of a sudden, people aren't laughing anymore about Colorado. They've got a shot in that conference.
Yeah.
Because that conference is so wide open.
Let me interrupt you. I thought their win over UCF was impressive.
Eye-opening.
Yeah, because that was one of those games I had penciled, because I hadn't been a fan of what Colorado looked like on the offensive and defensive lines. I mean, just in the trenches. And, they stepped up and took care of business in that game. I'm going, okay, now I'm paying attention again, because they didn't win that from a fluke standpoint or some big play happening at the end that saved everything or Travis Hunter, catching three straight touchdowns. You know what I mean? They went out and kind of won that game the real way football teams do. So I'm with you. I think K-State Colorado is a good game to watch. Without a doubt, the biggest game now is Ohio State, Oregon, right? Just from a ramifications standpoint, 2-3 in the country. The Big Ten for the first time ever is what the Big Ten put out. First time ever has three teams in the top four of the country, including Penn State, number four. In the AP poll. That's pretty impressive, right?
Yeah, and Penn State.
And they all play each other.
Right, and I don't know what to think of Penn State yet. I've watched them a lot, actually. I think at times they look dominant behind their running game with Singleton and Allen, and at times Drew Aller throws the ball down the field well, and then at times it's really choppy.
Yeah.
Their defense is okay. They were more impressive against Illinois than they were against UCLA. I didn't watch the entire UCLA game, but I was watching enough that UCLA moved the ball a little bit in that game. So Penn State has some opportunities here, and they have taken care of their business, and we will see them in Ohio State there in November, and that's going to be a fun one. So I think those three have kind of established themselves as the first tier, but I'm not sleeping on Indiana. What they're doing each week, they're putting up the same yardage and point totals as Ohio State. Are they better than Ohio State? I don't know. I don't think so. I think Curtis Rourke's been highly impressive for them. And Nebraska, despite the Illinois loss, is right there. I think they're in the mix. They play Indiana not this week, but next week. And that's going to be
funny. Wait a minute. Isn't that funny? Indiana, Nebraska showdown game. I mean,
huge game in Bloomington of all places.
Who saw that coming? Yeah.
So as you, and I was there when you asked Ryan Day the questions, he said it's ramping up and it reaches a little bit of a peak here, but it's not like they still have to play Nebraska and Penn State and, down the line until they get to that Michigan.
Yeah.
At Penn State, they got Nebraska at home and then Indiana's at home, correct?
Yeah. I mean, their other road game other than Penn State, their other road game after this week, is at Northwestern.
Well, I would say they should be fine there. But after what I witnessed Saturday with Tennessee going into Arkansas and Alabama going into Vandy and Miami was down by 25 points with 8 minutes left in the third quarter. I did stay up for that game.
I did too.
The Canes just Cam Ward was on fire. And I did think it was a targeting call late, but they weren't going to call it there. So it is a reminder that you got to go out and play him. Like Ryan Day that week isn't going to be hearing any Northwestern can't score type questions. He knows you were there a couple years ago when the wind was blowing and it was a – you never know what the weather is going to be out there. And I think they're playing on a tennis court now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, I've talked to a couple people who have been to a game there. They said they really enjoyed it, even though all of the seats, for the most part, are in the two end zones, you know.
Oh, that's Wrigley,
But, of course, Ohio State's playing them at Wrigley Field. Yeah. And I think that, you know, based on what I've heard about Wrigley Field in football, their home, their stadium on their campus might be better. You know what I mean? It doesn't seat as many, but might be more of a real football field than Wrigley Field. But we'll see.
Hey, we know the Cubs aren't playing at Wrigley Field now because their season's over.
Yeah,
it's October, so that most of the time they're done, right?
Yeah,
I had to get that in there. If you have any of your listeners, Cubs fans, I'm sorry, you're not a Cubs fan, are you?
Oh hell no! I grew up a Houston Astros fan because I was living in East Texas, and before that I was a St. Louis Cardinals fan because that was the only thing we could pick up in I could pick up in Alabama and up through 1965 was KMOX. So I was Ken Boyer was my hero, the third baseman for the Cardinals. Yeah. That is until I finally met him when I was a sports writer, and he was one of the biggest jerks I ever met. So, you know, don't ever meet your heroes, ladies and gentlemen, because you might be enthralled and you might just be very, very bummed out. But that's neither here. I want to ask one last thing, Bill. I don't think you're in the prediction business a little bit, and there's still days to go before Ohio State at Oregon. How do you think this game will – what's your feel on how this game will go? Because when you look – just when you look at statistically and then you look physically at these two teams, it looks like Ohio State has the upper hand just from production. Oregon's played a little tougher schedule. You know, they played Boise State. I think Boise State's a good football team. You know, obviously they didn't beat Michigan State as handily at home as Ohio State did on the road at Michigan State the week before. So just what's your take in a nutshell on that?
I'll pick Ohio State to win. I know I'm trying to look up the current odds. I think it was around 4.5.
Yeah, Ohio State was favored last time I looked. You know,
like here it is. So Ohio State's favored by 4 points, and the over/under is 52. So that means we're anticipating a 28-24 type game. I think it'll be play higher than that though. I think you're looking at 31-20 type game. And I'll have an official prediction later in the week, but that's where I was leaning early. Anytime you have a road favorite, that's risky. So Oregon will be up. It is a tough place to play. I was in the box a couple years ago when Oregon came into the Shoe and won. So they know they can compete. Granted, that was with Mario, but not Dan Lanning. But it's a huge, I guess when you were asking the question, thought about this is a huge game for Dan Lanning and Ryan Day. Ryan Day's faced enough criticism. One thing I'll say about him at the Iowa game, he
seems like Ohio yesterday.
It must have been. Might have been a week ago. Ohio State doesn't lose to unranked teams. They don't have the Vanderbilt moment. They don't have the Arkansas moment. Now they've had them in the past, but they take care of business in those games like none other. There's only however many what the streak is. But he's faced criticism, obviously, for Michigan, et cetera. Dan Lanning last year faced criticism for the Washington losses.
Two
of them. Yeah. And one in which he made some really bad fourth down calls. So it's a perception game for both of them because I think most people consider those two among current coaches the guys behind Kirby Smart right now. And Kirby has the two rings. We can do that debate all day. But these are the two that most people would I feel that way. These are the two that are most – that don't have a national title that are most likely to get one. Maybe Kellen DeBoer be in that discussion as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree with everything you just said. And the interesting thing about like you just said about Oregon is they didn't get it done last year and they had chances twice against Washington. Twice they lost to Washington, including in the last true Pac-12 championship game. And isn't that right? Yeah,
that was.
And then of course, But Ohio State's hungry too, to reprove itself, I guess, is the way I would put it. Last thing I want to ask you, even though I'm looking forward to this trip because I've never been to Autzen Stadium. I've never been to the state of Oregon. So I'm very much looking forward to it. Going to stay a few days after the game because Ohio State's off next week again. It's got his second, as Ryan Day said it without saying it, their true off week of the season, which comes at a really good time after your sixth game before you go into that, as you laid it out so perfectly a while ago. What looked like a slide to Penn State is not one. Nebraska looks like the real deal to a certain extent. They at least put up a fight, and we know about Indiana. So it's not an easy second half of the season by any stretch. But it is that moment where that you can show what you're all about. I want to ask one last thing. You touched on him a while ago. You got to see him live finally. Have you ever seen a freshman receiver better than Jeremiah Smith?
It's not just that he's a freshman and that dominant. So the answer is probably, I mean, Ryan Williams is good too, but they're different.
Right.
It's kind of a weird comparison with those two because Jeremiah Smith is like Terrell Owens already
He's
as a
huge.
freshman. Yeah, I didn't, that was the thing when he makes the one-handed catch, the hand goes up. I'm
But holding the other guy, holding the defender
like
off.
he's being held off
Yeah,
and he
like a
still makes a
basketball
catch.
center.
And I just with this recent, it's on an NFL Sunday, and we have the ticket. You'll flip around, and there's an Ohio State guy like Jackson's here, Olave's here, Marvin's here, Garrett's over here. He could be better than all of them. And I feel like we say that every time. Like we were saying that about Garrett, and then Marvin was probably a little better at Ohio State. Now we're saying it about him, and it doesn't feel out of place. I think that, and what helps, Tim, is Emeka's on the other side. Emeka's a pro too. He's going to play in the league.
Oh,
He's
yeah.
probably going to have a long career because he's an excellent hands, excellent route runner. So when you have that, I would say, no, I haven't seen a freshman like him. The last guy, he doesn't quite do this yet, where the last receiver I watched where I was like, I've never ever seen anybody like him is Randy Moss at Marshall. And he turned out to be pretty good at the next level. Jeremiah Smith has that way about him. And there's going to be work to do, but I mean, and Larry Fitzgerald was like that, but this kid's truly special. He's a game changer. That big pass play against Iowa I mentioned, where you don't get the big plays against them, that's when the blowout started. So looking forward to watching. I mean, you get him for 3 years. Are you kidding me? What if they would have had Ryan Williams with him? I know I've talked to those Ohio State recruiting guys. They were in on him too. I don't
Oh,
even
yeah.
know how you would even guard that.
I don't know how you would play everybody because you saw Brandon Ennis. He was like as highly rated a receiver as you could get several years ago. You saw him finally healthy. You saw him catch that slant on that fourth and on that fourth down play. He just looked, I mean, he's a big time receiver just waiting for his chances. Of course, Carnell Tate didn't get to play against Iowa. He's expected back on Saturday night out at Oregon. And then, you got Emeka Egbuka, who was projected to be a first round draft pick before he had that high ankle sprain last year that took him out of playing time for a long time. And he decided to come back, but he was projected as a first round draft pick last year, opted to come back because unfinished business, et cetera. I mean, that's what stands out about this team, Bill. This is a veteran laden Ohio State football team, which is rare in this modern era. It may be one of the last times you're going to see guys return wholesale in a mass way to have one more shot, right? And that's why I think this team has an edge over almost every team we're talking about. They're playing the rest of the season, including Oregon, because that veteran edge. That's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, and you can still lose a game in this format. That's what I'm struggling with now is like we had this wild Saturday of upsets, and it was afterward, you're like, well, Alabama's still in the playoff, and Tennessee's still in the playoff, and Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois, and they're right there. They're like
Again,
tied.
yeah.
Yeah,
Fine,
they're
yeah.
right in
They're
the mix.
back.
And Michigan has lost two games, can't pass the ball. And I was like, well, if they went out in the Big Ten, they'd be fine.
Yeah, but
It's
they're
just,
not gonna do that,
we
so
know they're not going to do that. I mean, I don't, they've got, I think they've got 4 wins and they've played three quarterbacks. They can't figure that out. Do
they have a quarterback? That's what
I
they're
think
trying
they'll
to figure out.
I think they'll go with Jack Tuttle
Oh,
after.
I do too. I
I
mean,
think they have to.
people who cover that team were wondering why. I mean, yeah, he's coming back from that elbow surgery and stuff, but they're wondering why he wasn't the guy from the get-go because these other two guys hadn't really, I'm talking about got people who cover the team, hadn't really caught their fancy, but they did their experiment over, I think, even though
Yeah, they
Tuttle had a
missed.
really tough,
Oh yeah, you
Tuttle had
could
a
say
tough second half, that's for sure.
that they mismanaged the quarterback
Yes.
situation, though, is what they did, and that's going to
Yes.
follow Sharon into next year because they do have a honeymoon year. They're that put it to you this way: program expectations. They're what they're doing this year. Like they can sit there and say we're in the national championship hunt every year, but I think I had this conversation with you last year where I said, they're a program where every fourth year or third year they have a team that can maybe do it.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
those were the ones that Urban beat in 12 and 16 and 19. And last year was the team that did it. So
Yeah.
they get a little bit of a honeymoon year. If this continues into next year and they don't figure out quarterback, that'll get dicey pretty quick in this format because you have 18 teams. USC 3 weeks ago. We were saying, oh, Lincoln Riley's got a. I was saying it. I thought they were, right there in the Big Ten mix.
Yeah.
They would go to Minnesota and lose.
Yeah.
Go to. That was a bad loss.
Yeah.
So it's wild, Tim. I'm still trying to figure out the 18-team league. I think the SEC has accomplished what we don't like necessarily, and we do like. Like we love the NFL. It feels like the NFL.
Yeah.
It feels like you can lose to Vandy first time in 60 games. And it's fine. They'll just drop to like a 9 seed. That's the part that I'm struggling with. The consequences in these games are different.
Yeah, exactly. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the great Bill Bender, thank you once again for joining the Tim May Show. It's been a while. It's been since July, but I think you had
Yeah.
pent up emotions you wanted to bring out in this latest edition. I'm just messing with you, of course. He always tells it straight, and he always has the facts to back it up, which is tough to argue with. But ladies and gentlemen, the great Bill Bender joined the Tim May Show. Thank you, Bill.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
Cut. He said after stammering through the intro, coming back in 3, 2, and 1. Yeah, boy, no matter how you look at this, Matt, and as Bill Bender kind of pointed out again, I mean, reinforced, this is a collision of heavyweights. I mean, in the middle of the season, it's kind of reminded me when I was growing up in Texas, Texas versus Oklahoma, but then it was Texas was in the Southwest Conference and Oklahoma was in the Big Eight at that point.
Yep.
And the point was, this was an intersectional game between two teams, Texas who recruited in Texas and Oklahoma who recruited in Texas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it
Yeah.
was kind of like Ohio State, Michigan, just like it, except it was the middle of the year. And it was so cool because you knew this really great game was coming in the middle of the year. Most of your rivalries are at the end of the year, but it was so cool to look forward to, right? And, you guys used to have that in the Big Ten for a while, like with Illinois, with
Yep.
Iowa,
Yeah.
Ohio State just beat and stuff. But this just has just that cool feel to it, doesn't it? I mean,
It
we like.
definitely does. Well, I think there's a couple of levels. I'll say as Ohio State guys, there's an aura of what Oregon has
Yeah.
become
Yeah.
essentially. And I think it's also like, the different uniforms. It's like, Oregon used to be like, oh, what uniform are they wearing? And now it's like, what uniform are they wearing and who are they playing? Because they're going to slaughter them, right? That's like,
Yeah.
it's a little bit of a different result. I also believe, just as we're all privy to, national pundits and even local pundits with, all the resources out there on social media is, when you look at the projections for the top 12, right, in the college football playoff, some have Ohio State winning the Big Ten
Yeah.
and some have Oregon winning the Big Ten. So it's all basically all arrows kind of pointing to it's the result of this football game, right? And now, at the end of the day, does it really matter? Will Oregon likely get in? Yeah. Will Ohio State likely get in if they were to lose to Oregon? Yeah. But there's something to be said, and it goes back to maybe even our preseason, show like this was how coveted. With as long as these seasons are going to be now, how coveted that first round bye is going to be for the division winners to not have to play a top 12 football team in the country, which is a slugfest, in its own right, whether it's high scoring or low scoring. It's going to be very, very high level, intense football for whomever is playing. And if you can kick the can down the road and be sit back and watching everyone kind of kill each other, to then have to play you, who's coming off of a bye, you get your body right, you get your mind right, you study, and then you get, get back down to business and getting back into your game flow is such a luxury. And for those teams, that play in the National Football League, they understand that the Kansas City Chiefs and what they've been able to do by being the top team in the AFC, to have, literally only having to win like two games, then you're in the Super Bowl. You
Yes.
know, that matters in the big scheme of things.
Yeah. And I was going to say, we were talking about in preseason, we've been talking about this for a while too. This may be the precursor, this may be the setting for the Big Ten championship game, which could feature Ohio State and Oregon if both went out after this game, no matter who loses it.
Sure.
Definitely that, we're in a total different era, ladies and gentlemen.
We
In
are.
case you just woke up today after a 5-year nap, it's crazy. But I wanted to ask you this. 5 games in to this season, what have you learned about Ohio State that you need, you know what I mean, that you needed to learn, meaning that they've reinforced, and what is something
Sure.
else? Maybe is there something out there maybe you haven't seen enough of, you still want to see? I think this team has become pretty mature at this point. I mean, I think they're doing a lot of things on offense.
I
They're
agree.
throwing a lot out there, and then defensively, thought they played extremely well against an improved Iowa offense. Let's put it that way. But except for one late run by Caleb Johnson against the backups, they shut out Iowa in a showdown
Correct.
game. But go ahead. I wanted to get your take on that.
I think what I love, what my biggest takeaway thus far, from an Ohio State standpoint, and I think it's very much a gift that will help us in that long season that I just talked about a little bit ago, is how multifaceted and how we spread the football around on offense. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about, again, it's the luxury of having Junkins and Henderson, and not one of them or the other, like, has to carry the ball 25 times a football game. That by itself will help us in a long football season. I know Mekabuka had, the 3 touchdowns, and we're kind of relying on Jeremiah Smith for, a weekly one-handed catch, or a touchdown.
Crazy.
But I meant like Carnell Tate and Mekabuka and Jeremiah Smith. I love the way that we, like, Mekabuka can have 8 catches for 60 yards, right? So he's kind of like your underneath player. I love the way that, teams can kind of, they're maybe so focused on Jeremiah Smith down in the red zone that Ibuka, you kind of fall asleep on him and he scores 3 touchdowns on you, right? Carnell Tate, Scott at tight end, scored a touchdown, I believe, against Michigan State. So, like, how our game planning isn't like we've got to get our best player the football as much as we can. It's how do we get all of our players, like 5 of them, touches, which makes it, and on the flip side, that makes you so hard to defend. Jeremiah Smith can get 10 targets and have 8 catches for 160 yards and 2 touchdowns, or he could have 3 targets, one big play, one one-handed catch and a touchdown, and Mekabuka can have, again, 9 targets, 8 catches for 60 and 3. It's just, you just don't know who to really like hone in on. And then I would also say,
Wait a
like,
minute,
if
let me
no one
interrupt you.
else.
It's not only who's going to be featured from week to week, it's who's going to be featured from series to series. I mean,
Correct.
it's
Correct.
literally like that. Go ahead. I'm
And
sorry.
I almost feel like going back to the run game, which is kind of where I started, is I think you add in the layer of Will Howard and his legs in the run game, which we've seen kind of like we haven't had to rely on it all that often, but when it hits, especially down in the red zone, you're like, oh, dude, that's an awesome layer that you kind of didn't have last year with Kyle McCord. But I also think like the running style of Junkins and Henderson are completely different, and I actually think like the personality of the run plays we call with them in the game are a little bit different too. So that's like Ryan Day, Chip Kelly, Justin Fry, kind of like you said, every down or every series when one's in the game or when one runs off and one runs in, is like the personality kind of changes. And that's very difficult for a defense to flip that personality, to go, oh shoot, it's Henderson now. We have to play more zone scheme. Oh, Junkins is in the game. It's going to be a little bit more gap, a little bit more power scheme. It's like you just can't do that.
You know what's funny about that is I asked Chip Kelly that very question at the beginning of the year. You know, are you going, will you be calling? Yeah, because of course you do, but because you feature whoever's in there. Just like, if you've got a quarterback that can run and throw at the beginning of the year, you're going to feature that quarterback running and throwing. You know what I mean? But yeah, and he kind of basically said, no, pretty much you call the plays based on the, and I've been doing this for 41 years now, just covering Ohio State and longer than that, going back to when I was 19 as a beginning sports writer. And I know that you feature what your guys do best.
Oh,
Uh,
yeah.
why, why, why else would you have different plays that feature that kind of thing? So anyway, it doesn't matter. But I think, like you just said, I think Chip Kelly, you can see his imprint, man.
Yeah, like a maestro, right?
Yes.
He's got all the instruments, right? That
Yes.
all the elite instruments, and he's just kind of like standing there with his, I don't even know what those things are called,
Yeah,
just
baton.
playing, exactly, just playing and going and like staying in flow. The offense never looks very herky jerky. It never looks like we're attempting to be something we're not. It's never like we force the football to one guy to a fault.
Yeah.
And here's the last thing I'll say, going back to the running backs is, and I think it was like last week too against Michigan State is, Junkins a long of 21, Henderson a long of 12. I think last week, Junkins might have had like a 19 or maybe like a 31-yard a run. It's like those runs
Yes.
are like one broken tackle away from a house call,
Yeah.
and so. There's something to be said about those, like I call them like chunk runs, like, okay, 6 yards is great, six or four, but it's like, but then when you pop 12, 12 can become 50, like with a shoestring tackle, right? Or stepping out of one, or making one safety miss, on the edge, or that corner support, late is the reason why the run only went for 21 instead of going for 71.
Yeah.
So that's what's exciting to me, and the home run capability about both of them. And I think that at no point have we, which a lot of offensive coordinators and quarterbacks like to do, is throw the ball around the yard. We're still so dedicated to both those young men to turn around and hand it off because that will just open up the pass game so much more.
Yeah, and man, I invite people to like, when you're watching a game, don't just be that guy watching where the ball is. Well, I said, watch Seth MacFarlane. Watch
Yeah.
why? I mean, Tucker Shabola had a day the other day. I mean, did he make every block great? No, but man, he asserted himself as a six
Sure.
foot seven, 325, 30-pound guy. And my point of being not just straight up blocking a two gap defensive lineman back into the linebacker realm, which he did several times, which blows up really what Iowa's all about on defense. But when he gets out on the run, all of these guys, when they get them out on the run, with those pulls, it's a sight to behold sometimes. It's like a thundering herd, pardon the
It
expression, Marshall.
definitely is. It definitely is. And I think that that's and that's also the process of Chip Kelly,
Yes.
continuing in game to learn what does this offensive line do, this group do best together.
Against
And then
that
you
group they're
go
going against. Yeah.
against the group they're going against with what back carrying the football behind it. So there's definitely some levels to it. And I also think that's like what the opportunity has existed with the five games that we've won so far have allowed us to set the table for this matchup against Oregon.
Yeah, pretty interesting. We already talked about the defense in depth, et cetera. I'm gonna ask you one last thing here and we'll get out of here. I don't usually do this, but I'm gonna ask you. So who you got? I mean, you almost have to pick Ohio State, in some respects, but you don't. Is Ohio State ready for this game? I mean, like you heard me maybe ask Ryan after the game on Saturday against Iowa. I mean, this. And he used this analogy I've been using all along, this stepping stone where the steps have gotten higher, a little bit higher each week. Now, this
Sure.
one maybe is double high, but because this is a team that not only plays really good defense, but plays really good offense. Ohio State hadn't really played that kind of team yet,
Right.
but I think Ohio State is up to the challenge. Just what how do you see this game turning, I guess, in a nutshell?
Yeah, I'm absolutely gonna go with my Buckeyes. I think a lot of that is based around the and I keep talking about like this isn't the first rodeo for most of these guys playing in big games. Having played in the college football playoff, having played, against Notre Dame in back-to-back seasons in prime time for Donovan Jackson, for Josh Fryer,
Mecca
for
Buka.
Jack Sawyer, for Emeka Buka, for these guys, I'm not trying to say it's not going to just be another game, but it's another big game that they've gone through the process to get ready for.
Yes.
They'll pull the youngins along with them, you know, and thankfully we're not relying upon a significant amount of, you know, young players because we're so hyper talented that, you know, the maturity level is not going to be in question by any means. I will say I will question, as I said, Will Howard's going to play in the biggest game of his career. I'll question his ability to manage this game as the quarterback under this pressure, under the scrutiny that will come from his performance as the quarterback at Ohio State.
Let me insert. And he
Yeah.
has won a Big 12 championship, you know, 2 years ago.
Sure.
So
That's
he's
great.
been in a, but you're exactly right. This is a cut
But this
above,
is
right?
Ohio State. I mean, you know, some people don't even acknowledge the Big 12 as a Power Four conference. You know, I mean, come on. It's like that's why the commissioners of the SEC and the Big Ten are meeting about a super conference, not with the Big 12 commissioner as
And
well.
ironically, both of these quarterbacks were in the Big 12 last year, Dillon
Yeah,
Gabriel. It's
exactly.
crazy.
Exactly. Yes. So I think, you know, I think it's Buckeyes. I think it's you know, your ability to travel out there. And I think it's also for all of us as Buckeye fans is like stay privy to, you know, the information. All of us maybe are gonna Google or DVR, you know, an Oregon game and or go back on YouTube and watch an Oregon game to see what type of team we're actually gonna, you know, be playing against. To be ready to be critical, you know, of our players and see our players, you know, go out and play their very best.
If you're going to be critical, at least have some knowledge backing you. I think that's the deal, instead of just gut emotion.
Well, I mean, looking back at recruiting rankings, I don't have them in front of me, but I want to say that Dan Lanning, since he's been at Oregon, has had a top eight recruiting class as
They're doing it.
well, you know, the last 3 or 4 years in a row. So the same kids, and for God's sakes, you know, what Richard McNutt's son, Trey, you know, commits to Oregon, has an offer. He's an Ohio kid who's got an offer from Ohio State, the whole Big Ten, now I guess Oregon in the Big Ten with an offer, and chooses to go out there. So there's something special about that that's going on there. There's a vibe, you know, it's like Nike World with Phil Knight,
NIL in full swing.
NIL out the wazoo, and the winning, I will say. There's something to be said for kids leaving, you know, the Midwest to go play, you know, football out at Oregon. So it's going to be definitely a challenge.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I am looking forward to being there. I've never been to Oregon, never been to Autzen Stadium, obviously, since I've never been to Oregon. One of the few places I've never been, but I'm looking forward to it. The atmosphere is supposed to be ridiculous, and I guess it's going to be over the top this week. But I'm also very much looking forward to getting back with my buddy here, Matt Wilhelm, one of my favorite guys ever.
Victory Monday. Victory Monday, Todd.
And we'll just chop it up for you. Next week, it'll be an off week for Ohio State next week. So, win or lose, there'll be plenty of time to chop this thing up. But for my buddy Matt Wilhelm, this is Tim May. Until next week, we'll see you then.